MLW Radio. Now, your host, Mr. St. Laurent, Court Bauer, and Conan.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence. K-Dog is free.
Hey everyone, I'm Court Bauer, joined by the man who has held more AWA gold than Vern Gagne himself, MSL. Conan should be joining us shortly. He's just butt-dialing his Periscope again, so look for that online. That said, speaking of social media, what's your take on the opening segment on Raw with Seth Rollins' promo highlighting Roman Reigns' wellness violation?
Well, first of all, what a great introduction that was, Court. Thank you so much. Not to bury myself here, but unfortunately, I believe my belt is actually made of nickel. The AWA didn't have enough money for gold. But to get to the opening of Raw, part of me was glad that they addressed it. There's nothing weirder than when everyone in the arena has something on their mind and WWE just pretends that it doesn't exist. It was strange to see it addressed. I'm very, very curious when he does come back. If there is any sort of consideration to finally turning him heel, I don't know. But to act like it didn't happen or not address it would have been weird. So I think they made the right call.
I thought it was an interesting thing to do because typically it's like, oh, he's just vanished or he's right. been suspended for beating up someone backstage. We don't have the footage. And it's hard to book in the era of social media where everything's out there, right? And to then just try to put it under this facade that, no, there's some other alternate universe and this is what happened to Roman Reigns. He fell into a hole and he won't be seen until Battleground. It would be weird. So I think it was actually the right thing, like you said. And again, you live in an era where you don't have that ability, that maybe creative luxury to weave a story that would take you in a different direction where maybe a heel gets heat as easily as you would have in the 80s when, say, someone gets popped for a DWI and is in the clink or something. It doesn't work the same. So I thought that was the right move as well. And I thought Roman Reigns and his approach last week to the issue and how he addressed it was exactly how he should have. He took complete responsibility, accountability. And, he's been under a lot of pressure. And I understand.
Do we have any idea what it was?
I don't know, and I don't know if we will unless he decides to divulge it. Look at Roman Reigns. He's been under immense pressure for 2 years, being groomed to be the heir apparent to John Cena. And, on top of that, now he's going to have to, people are going to rag on him at arenas over this. And I just can't think of anyone in recent time that has had that much pressure put on their shoulders. And he's handled it extremely well. You talk to people backstage, you talk to the boys, they're all saying, it's very commendable the way he has handled himself over this because of the reaction to the crowd and how things have worked out. A lot of people, we've seen years and years of wrestlers where they're just, they're hot-shotted, they're pushed, and they just crumble. I'm really interested to see how WWE responds creatively to Roman Reigns in the new era. And how they program him. Is he a heel on the flip side? Is he a babyface? What do you do?
Well, there's a couple things at play here. Because number one, and I've said on the show, I have felt there's been a few times in segments live on the air where I've felt the pressure has gotten to him. But behind the scenes, in terms of him personally, there's so many examples in wrestling of guys where the pressure gets them and they start to crack. Whereas with Roman, you're like you said, everything I always hear is he handles everything really well. I can tell you when guys get popped, I'll talk to wrestlers in the company to try to just get a vibe of either A, what they think happened or what they're hearing. And usually you hear, this guy, is a bit of a partier. And with Roman, that hasn't been the vibe that I've gotten at all. There are guys that have certain reputations where the speculation goes in a different direction. Whereas with Roman, everybody's always saying, this guy lives clean. This guy, for a guy, like you said, with all that pressure, a lot of times it can lead to relieving pressure in ways that aren't healthy. And you never hear that about Roman at all.
And also looking at WWE, which is at its 10-year mark, actually, just past it, on having a wellness policy in place. And you look at the last decade and the legacy of this wellness policy coming in the aftermath of Eddie Guerrero and then being revised after the Chris Benoit family tragedy, which occurred 9 years ago this week. I think the business, the well-being of the performers in it, is much better because of this wellness policy being enacted. And you know, promoters have no obligation to do that. And I know there was some public scrutiny towards WWE over that years ago, but they could have at any point decided to just let it slide. And here we are, their top star gets popped for a wellness policy. It's it tells you that the policy, when testing people, it does work. And you know, they've done so much for even Sonny, you know, who was in rehab, and I think they just paid for another round of rehab. I can't confirm that, but I believe that's the case. And you know, she's gone numerous times to try to beat her problems, and I commend her for continually, you know, going and not quitting. But that's, you know, no other promotion does that in the world. Not in Japan, not in the U.S. Dixie Carter never has. When she went before Congress, I mean, look that up. It's very revealing. So it says a lot that they have, because it's not a cost-effective strategy.
And some of the pressure is unfair, don't you think? Just in the sense that, you know, the media especially always scoffs kind of at the idea of this being compared to sport. And yet they want them to be held to the standards of sport. And how many rock stars or actors have wound up dead at a young age because of drugs? And nobody is saying that Interscope Records should be drug testing their artists.
Yeah, that's an interesting parallel. I mean, it's this weird hybrid that is pro wrestling. It is sport. It is entertainment. You can make an argument for either depending on what you want the desired outcome to be for what it is. If you want to be sanctioned by a commission that's just taking a cut of your purse but not really providing any services to the promotion or the well-being of the wrestlers, which is the case for a lot of athletic commissions in the 80s, and when they got it decommissioned, that was actually a positive because it was just lining the pockets of people that were doing nothing and bringing nothing to the table. They're doing stuff like they do in Nevada, where they do active blood testing, all this stuff. That there's a benefit to it, but a lot of commissions didn't do that. So it made sense to reposition it as entertainment for the tax benefits as well. When you look at the advantages of being presented as a sport, it's the advertising dollar. And that's something that they've been trying to be more aggressive towards and makes a lot of sense. So wrestling has always been this weird hybrid thing, and where it is on the totem pole of either sport or entertainment can be debated, but it has a mass appeal and it's scrutinized by the media. And right now, more than ever, you look at WWE, they're getting regular coverage from Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, and the list goes on and on. They have amazing mass media coverage right now, unprecedented for any wrestling company. And it's built their credibility, but also their responsibility to be forthcoming with these things. And so here you are in a situation where Roman Reigns, the guy that is the heir apparent, is now sitting out 30 days. And on Monday night's show, they had to now book around that. And what's your take on week two of the Dean Ambrose era as WWE World Heavyweight Champion? As long as that title exists, maybe they'll split up the title and there'll be the WWE title, the world title. We'll see what happens with the brand extension.
I mean, he's a guy that there's been so many times where I just felt like he was being overpushed in a way that was damaging to him long term. You know, within the last couple of years, there were times where because of injuries or wellness policy violations or whatever the case may be, where you rushed him into the number two babyface spot, but didn't give him any of the wins that would build the credibility of somebody in that spot. Now he's rushed into this number one babyface spot. I just don't see him as a guy that works in that role. One of the positives, at least, is that the people don't boo him when he comes out.
Right.
So I guess for a company that was struggling in some ways, there are positives to it. I don't see him as a long-term solution. I think just on the show in general, because of how long the show is, so few people are over, so few segments are over. There were a few bright spots. But they just have some fundamental problems right now that I don't know what the answers are, because so many of those problems tie back to the 3 hours.
A lot of it has to do with those 3 hours, and they're not going to move off of those 3 hours. And I'm curious to see how they revitalize their rosters, when they bring in new talent, when they bring talent up, when they bring back returning stars, and keep that three-hour show moving and grooving. come the fall with football returning and right on the heels of hopefully a hot SummerSlam. But, you know, Dean Ambrose as champion, 2 weeks in, it's hard to really get an idea of what we have here. But I think you're right. If he had won it like WrestleMania, that's a great statement match for him. Even if it was a 50-50 match and he loses, you know, Steve Austin, Bret Hart style, you know, goes out on his sword and ultimately lives to fight another day, but shows he has a lot of heart and you can't ever count him out. That's saying a lot.
And you know me, man, when it comes to like building stars and moving guys up the card or even moving guys down the card, which is an art in and of itself, to make sure a guy that you've used up, that he gives as much of a rub on the way down as possible. Yeah, I kind of look at it like as mathematics, and some people might think that's nerdy, but I do think there is a certain equation of how you get fans to look at a guy at a certain part of the ladder. So it always goes back to who do you ever beat? And so when you apply that to Dean Ambrose, if you give me his resume, and again, you know, sometimes fans get upset. Hey, I like this guy. Why are they criticizing him? We're not criticizing him. I think he's an incredible talent. I've thought that since he was on the indies as Moxley. It was like, wow, this guy, there's something captivating about him. But if you were going to put him in this spot, you know, if you and I right now made a list of the biggest stars in the company, Brock, Dean, Taker, Triple H, et cetera, who has he been put over? Nobody. And yet he's the champion of the world. So there's just kind of a disconnect in the way that they do things. I mean, I saw this tweet from Rad Pitta. It said, Dean Ambrose has the moveset that I think my dad would have if he tried to wrestle today. And I do think there is something to that, just in the sense that when you stack Dean up against these monsters, we can argue all day long about whether he should beat them or not, but the point is that he hasn't, and yet he's the champion. So what does that mean?
We've talked about this a lot, but with every promotion in the United States in particular, is that ladder you have to climb to ascend to the top, and being along for the journey and seeing that wrestler accomplish or reach that milestone. And one of the most simplest versions of that was with Bret Hart in 1991, when he switched from Hart Foundation tag team competitor to singles competitor over the summer of 91, and then went on from working prelim guys in on the flip side of WrestleMania 7 to then working, you know, well, lower card guys to mid card guys, all the way up to August encounter with Mr. Perfect for the IC title. It was a logical progression. You got to see him accumulate several wins. It was so clean and linear. There was no real detours. It was just another win for Bret Hart, another win for Bret Hart. Hit us over the head. And pro wrestling is marketing, and it's repetition, and hitting us with that repeatedly reinforces the guy's credibility, his progress, that he's in the conversation, and then having an announcer sprinkle in, you know, he's really climbing the rankings. And that's the thing that I think I would love to see an organization have, is a top 10, and they every week make sure to update it. And only some weeks it may not change at all. Some weeks you might have a little adjustment, but it's really interesting because it can make a rookie stand out. When he cracks that top 10, he can stay at number 10 for a while, but just to be in the number 10 slot makes the guy big time. So those little things I wish I'd seen, you know, play into the sport dynamic of pro wrestling. Will WWE institute something like that? Maybe not, but I wouldn't be surprised if one day NXT considers it, because they are a little bit different in how they present the product and what they do. As far as Dean Ambrose and trying to create layers to his character, I think wins is one thing. Getting us to see more than the eccentric Dean Ambrose is another thing. Would you involve Renee in the presentation of Dean Ambrose? I mean, it's very well documented, even on the WWE Network, that they're a couple, and that would put her in jeopardy and create some sort of drama. And in the past, when there's been women in jeopardy and the baby faces the white knight in shining armor, like Matt Hardy, Lita Kane as an example, when I was at WWE, it popped ratings and got women invested in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to, no matter what you do, of not booking in a panic. Like when you describe the Bret Hart ascension to the IC title, which was done perfectly and planned in advance. I thought his ascension to the heavyweight title was completely bungled. It was like the complete opposite of the IC title. And so when it comes to Renee, if they did anything with her and Dean, I would hope it would be something that was planned out, not done in a panic in 1 week of Vince saying, well, goddamn, it's, you know, something's, not getting over the way we wanted. Let's just
terrible Vince McMahon minus 2 points.
Let's just throw a curveball here. And the thing is that I do think it couldn't hurt. Right. Because if you're trying to portray him as heavyweight champion of the world and he doesn't really have that look and they haven't given him the credibility with the wins, the fact that he's got this hot girlfriend, it is a credibility boost in terms of seeming like a star. Everybody knows it anyways. The only problem is she's very good at her job.
Yeah, she is.
And now you're losing a great interviewer.
Are you, though? Because to me, you just need a little bit of this. You don't need to go overboard and go over the top, which is always something a booker promoter is tempted to do, is just go 200% down. Just a little subtle something. You know, it doesn't have to go crazy, or you can take a 3-week detour, and then she goes back to her job, or every week she still has her job, but then there's this thing. Like, when I was there, we had Lillian Garcia and Viscera involved in a love story, and she was always the ring announcer, as Viscera would try to romanticize, but at the same time, she always was the ring announcer. She wasn't now just backstage, like, making out with Viscera, which I don't think she probably would have been thrilled about, but that you know, she kept her job during that angle, and I think it would be important to keep Renee there. I mean, I'm sure Renee would be an amazing manager or valet. I think she has the ability to do that. She's amazing in terms of just being live on TV and all the crazy variables that happen on live TV that you have to act like that's part of the show.
I mean, the reason I would take – if I was going to do this, mm-hmm. I would probably take her out of it. Because
out of interviewing.
Out of being okay. A full-time interviewer. So I would have to weigh the pros and cons.
Why would you want to do that just because you felt you can't be half pregnant? You got to be one thing or the other?
Right, that's one thing. But mm-hmm. also with Dean, I've always seen him cast much better as a heel. I think that's been part of his problem to begin with. He's so talented. He's over as a babyface anyways. But I just think he's naturally more suited as a heel. And especially like right now, there's nothing they can do right now for this to really work where the average casual fan would take him seriously as the number one babyface heavyweight champion of the world. Long term, if he had a good heel run, he's so good that people would start cheering him anyways. It'd be tough to keep him heel. But him going heel with Renee, and she's got such a classy vibe, and he's kind of got like the scumbag vibe. I think there's so much you could do there. It would be the best chance you would have of really making him a credible main event superstar. Mm. So since that's the direction I'd want to go, like in my mind, it's either or with her. I'm not saying there's not other ways to do it, but if I was going to have any sort of on-screen romance with them, he's going heel number one, and she's managing him full time.
I think she could make a really good heel that way, too. I think there is something to that. By the way, Marty DeRosa, who just started, Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling on MLW Radio Network, he does a great Dean Ambrose, and Sarah does a great, great Renee. So check them out. They do a lot of role-playing with that, which sounds actually very dirty the way I just plugged them.
Oh, that's fine. That's not what I'm listening to.
And just to mention, Raw last night did a 2.21, which is very close to last week's 2.44, and the previous week before that was 2.03. So,
and there's no football right now. So these are numbers skewed upward. So wait till football comes.
Well, we'll see what happens. And again, when football comes, you'll have a completely refreshed roster. And it'll be interesting to see how SmackDown on a Tuesday night does compared to a Monday night with Raw. That's going to create an interesting challenge for WWE because they're going to try to cross-promote and cross-market from Monday to Tuesday. And how they accomplish this, we shall see. But one thing we're actually going to see in August is Vader time in the UK as Will Ospreay versus Big Van Vader is signed for Revolution
nice.
Pro.
I hadn't heard about this.
They are a go for early August, and the people built it up on Twitter with all the drama, and the second the match was announced, I look at my Twitter timeline, and people are tearing down the match and saying it's horrible. What's your take on this?
When you book a match based on an angle where the angle is that wrestling is fake and we're complaining about who can have the faker Fakerson?
Well, it's one of those things. We're talking about how you navigate those waters in the world of Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram where it's like you're booking, you know, this alternate universe, and sometimes you can touch upon it. Like one of the earliest, I guess, viral things in wrestling I can remember is Teddy Hart and all the drama in 2004 and how that like kind of created his whole persona, you know, public enemy image. And he got a lot of bookings off of that notorious fame, and I guess they're trying to now do that with this match. Is this a case of the backlash? And it's not like this insane backlash, but when it was first announced, there was like, oh, are you kidding me? It was a joke. What are you guys doing actually making this match? Do you think that's a case of valid criticism or internet elitists?
Well, I mean, first of all, when you look at the Teddy thing, just one small thing that makes it a little bit different to me is that even if wrestling was 100% a shoot, you could have still done that Teddy angle, because the outrage was that he was upstaging the winners by doing these backflips when the match was over. I know there were other parts of it too, but there were elements of it that we could book a character in that direction, and the angle still makes sense without exposing the business in any way. Whereas, you know, the feud with Vader and Will Ospreay, what is the feud? The feud is I'm shitting on how you choose to fake fight. And it's just an awkward thing. In terms of people bitching about it, listen, this is what, some indie overseas that 99% of wrestling fans aren't going to know about or ever going to see. If there's going to be fans that are excited about this, we're talking about it now. So if you're the promoter, assuming the money makes sense, there were people that were going to be interested in this. Anybody shitting on it, just don't watch it. I mean, I think this is another case of people just liking to complain.
My prediction, I think the venue, from what I understand, holds maybe 500, 600, okay. Don't quote me, but that's kind of the ballpark. You're not talking about 5,000 seat capacity. I believe they'll sell out. I think people will watch it. I think people will be very curious. I think we'll see a lot of GIFs on Twitter of spots from the match and everything. But it'll be an interesting opportunity for Will Ospreay to spread his wings. He's working a totally different type of guy, and a guy that's north of 60 now, which is shocking but true about Big Van Vader.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity for him to spread his wings as a worker instead of being the guy that's doing all this innovative stuff. It's to now channel his inner Shawn Michaels, who Shawn could run across the ring and bump, you know, just bump for guys and make them look great, and they're not doing much. This is his opportunity to show us, does he have that Shawn Michaels quality about him as a worker? Can he take a guy that's very limited at this point in time and make us care and make that match great and make him shine? And that's what great workers are about, no matter the Eric. How can he accomplish this? Because a lot of the burn of this match is going to be on him. Now, veterans do lead matches. That's just the way it is. But at the same time, Will Ospreay is going to have, you know, his end to carry on this to make Vader look great, because Vader's going to be limited. He can't be doing all the stuff he once did in WCW 1993 or New Japan in the 90s and All Japan in the late 90s. It's a different time, and you can't expect that from Big Van Vader. So it'll be interesting to see how Will Ospreay rises to the occasion, and I think if anyone's up to it, it is the this prodigy that's come out of Great Britain. I mean, he's an amazing talent, but I'm curious to see how he tackles this. Another thing I'm curious to see about is when Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Asuka, and Shinsuke Nakamura debut. They were all at TV this week. A lot of people were wondering if Finn Balor was going to debut last night during the Miz segment for the Intercontinental title. Finn Balor had tweeted out that he was at the arena, which got the world buzzing about it, yet he did not debut. When and how would you book these four guys who, first of all, do you philosophically believe in introducing them on TV before the draft, just, you know, weeks before the draft, if not days? Or do you hold off and just put them over as being NXT guys that are getting pulled in from the draft that are great gets, and just showcase their footage from NXT, and it puts over NXT?
Well, here's a few things. Number one, you know, I've talked about this before. I purposely try to avoid watching NXT for the purpose of when guys do get called up. I want to be able to judge them on what I'm seeing, which is the average fan doesn't watch NXT. So I want to be able to see it the way the average fan sees it. So I couldn't tell you what's happening right now in NXT, but I do know for these guys, I definitely would not want to call them up one by one, like in a quick succession. I really would want to kind of space it out and make each one feel special. I do like the idea also of maybe coming out of this draft, the idea that, you know, only people from Raw and SmackDown are eligible for the draft, and therefore, you know, whether it's Shane running one show and Stephanie running the other, the NXT guys are free agents. And so maybe Shane and Stephanie are both after Finn Balor or whoever's the first one that you decide you're going to bring up. To make them feel extra special, that, you know, there's, whether it's a bidding war, whatever the case may be, any of these guys who are so talented, whichever is the first one to call up, and I would hope it would be Finn, I would want to see them big push right off the bat. and see, especially in the two brand era, can we just bring them in and from day one we say that they're a top guy? We'll have to see if the fans buy it. But I would not want to see them brought in low and the kind of normal WWE 50-50, kind of like the way we're seeing Apollo Crews right now. I want to see Finn brought in where it's special. They're both after him. Everybody in the company acts like he's a big deal, and let's see if the fans believe it.
Yeah, and I think they all have so much to contribute, especially if you're going to do, say, maybe two women's divisions. You need Asuka up there. You can't have her down there. She's
do you
incredible.
Think they'll do two women's divisions?
I would prefer one show gets the women's division, one show
gets Cruiser.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that.
I mean, in a perfect world, I'd love to see just one tag team division.
Yes.
But
tag team, why can't the World Heavyweight Champion, World Tag Team Champion just navigate to each show, kind of take turns? You create a contender on one show. I would hate for the idea of the tag teams to be exclusive to one, but I also hate having two tag titles. So why can't we just have the champs that go back and forth? Is it because they want to have two sets of house shows with champions?
Yeah, and the other thing you got to remember is there's going to be injuries that maybe a champion goes down. And the other thing you're going to have to remember, too, is look at this wellness thing. You know, you never know when someone's going to get popped. So the more star power, the more gold you have to market your shows with, the feeling is it's better. The flip side of that, and playing devil's advocate, is that the more gold you have, the less the gold means. It's devalued. It's not as prestigious. So it depends what philosophy you subscribe to.
All right. Well, I know we've got Conan here now, so I want to ask both you guys about this. We've talked about it, all this speculation about guys that could be coming in, especially now with this brand split. They need guys for the rosters. Kurt Angle's gone public and said that they called him up and wanted to bring him in now. I don't know if this is true or not. I'm hearing it might not be true. Have you guys heard anything about this?
I just see what's reported and that they have not had any talks of consequence. They are not in talks to bring Kurt in. Mark Madden actually had Kurt Angle on, and he disclosed on his show that he was having dialogue with WWE about such, but he couldn't.
Which,
really,
if he was, why would he say it publicly like that?
The only time you do that is if, like, maybe a deal is just about done or is done, or if the deal has, or the dialogue has died down, and you're trying to jumpstart it and put it out there in the public to generate pressure, speculation, interest, and now the onus is on the promotion to now answer those calls to do a deal. But sometimes then it goes like this, where it I don't know. I mean, it's at the same time, I really was uneasy about Kurt working full time or even a limited capacity. Just knowing what I knew when I worked with him years ago, he's so talented, but doing more than maybe one or two matches a year would be, I think, challenging for him. But what do you think, Conan?
I talked to him pretty in depth when we went to Phoenix, when that guy Riff Raff, MSL's favorite rapper, was in, remember that thing we did in Phoenix with the
your
chill
fight? When is your, yeah, fight two happening?
I have no idea, brother. But I remember they, bro, one of the ideas, listen to this, was actually to have Riff Raff, okay, against Kurt Angle.
For like a future show?
Yes, that's why he got involved in that match. You know, and Kurt being the ring general that he is.
Kurt or Kurt? I wasn't in there.
Kurt, I'm so used to fucking up your name on purpose. I'm fucking this guy's name up.
Do you call him Kurt every time you see him? He's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Exactly.
So this Riff Raff guy, is he a big deal? Because I had never heard of him at all.
Probably.
But he has over a million followers on Twitter. So I mean,
let me tell you what happens a lot of times in wrestling. And you know this, Em. Promoters mark out for somebody and they bring him in. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd heard of him. Like, I had heard the name Riff Raff, but I never heard his music till I got there. And so one of the promoters must be humongous marks, because if you're going to get a rapper, why do you get Riff Raff when there's way bigger names out there? You know?
Yeah, very weird.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like. It looks like he picks up Riff Raff for a living. But so the guy – so I was talking to Kurt. Tremendous. I was talking to Kurt. And let me give you a little sidebar. I know you guys know who he is, but you remember Don Fry, right?
Of course. Oh, yeah, legendary. Yeah.
So Don Fry walks into the room, bro, and he just looks like what he looks like on TV, like just a legit badass, right?
Right.
He looks like
the real deal.
Remember, Do you remember the old pictures, M? I don't know if, Court, you ever saw them, of Scott Hall when he was like a cowboy?
Oh, with the mustache and everything?
Starship Coyote or Spaceship Coyote.
And this name, right? What a JoJo name if there ever was one. And so, yeah, so he kind of looked, you know, really tough, you know, with a really bushy mustache, you know, Marlboro Man type, you know, haggard guy comes in. And he's got the typical voice you'd hear when me and Disco imitate old timers. Hey, how you doing? Hell of a deal, you know, like that. He had that type of voice. And he came in, hey, how are you going? How you doing? And Kirk goes, who is that? And bro, that's Don Fry. Oh, my God, that's Don Fry. And he was like, you know, marking out for him because fucking Don Fry is a big deal. And I go, bro, did you ever see the fight between Don Fry and Takayama? And he never had. So I showed it to him.
Really?
And he fucking popped even bigger. And so, and it's kind of funny because when Takayama came to AAA for that World Cup last year, remember?
Right.
I kept telling ADR, did you ever see the fight between him and Don Fry? He goes, oh, yeah, that was a great fight. I go, I'm going to see if he'll do the same thing to you, but as a shoot. He goes, hey, man, chill out. So the minute I saw Takayama, I told him, hey, you, ADR, you know, Fry, strong style. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And ADR's going, no, 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 no. And so they actually behind my back went and actually put that spot in the match. I super popped. That's how they started the match. They were both going at each other with forearms. So it was fucking awesome. But anyway, so I was talking to Kurt Angle. And bro, let me tell you, he's just in a – I really believe that he really wants to end his legacy there. You know, he went to TNA, saw how fucking brutal that place was, took his money, you know, like Christian, like everybody else that went there and goes, Jesus Christ, what the fuck am I doing here? I need to go back and end my fucking career on a high note, on the best place that you can end it, which is WWE, you know? And I think deep down inside, he wants the correct closure. He deserves it. He fucked up. A lot of people fucked up. He's money, bro. There's so many things you can do with him with so many people. You give him a reduced schedule like you gave Brock, like you give Undertaker, and he deserves. And bro, like we went to the bar that night, and, you know, everybody's at the bar kicking it. Nobody got overly, you know, overboard. He didn't even come down and drink. You know, because he was like, I don't want to be part of that scene. And I understand. And I think he's hurt that if WWE hasn't talked to him, he's probably trying to generate interest, like you said, kind of like Floyd Mayweather did with Conor.
Right.
You know? And it's, you know, and it's kind of desperate in a way. But I hope he fucking finishes his career there and the right way. And he goes out on a good note, man, because it's going to kill him if he doesn't, you know, inside.
It's a strategy that a lot of times doesn't work with WWE.
Yeah, I know.
And the best strategy with WWE is when they think that you don't want them, and then they just want to, for the fuck of it, prove that they can get you anyway.
Yes, but that's always the way.
I know that is the best strategy, and only a couple guys have been able to do it and have been in a position financially to do it. And I think he's probably very well off financially, and it isn't even money. It's, you know, at the end of the day, his legacy. And I think if WWE sees he wants to go over there and work, why don't they reach out and find out what he wants? He may even come out for it at a good price. You know, he wants to work and he wants to finish his career there. Don't you think he deserves that?
I don't believe in deserve. I just don't get emotional about this kind of stuff. It's obviously something he wants. I mean, if I was advising him, he's facing a kind of like a private PR battle in a way of, you know, he's got to repair his internal image of how they look at him, which is difficult because publicly I think his image is fine. But if the situation is that at one point in time they were worried about, you know, we can't have an Olympic gold medalist die on our watch kind of thing, that is a tough reputation to repair. You know, he could be completely clean on the straight and narrow, maybe for quite some time, whatever his situation is. How do you prove it? You know what I mean?
Let me ask you a question, both of you. So you're WWE. Would you work with Kurt Angle again, yes or no?
He would have to pass the meds. And when you go to Pittsburgh, they put you through a battery of exams, the impact test, so much stuff from concussions to blood tests, just to making sure, you know, structurally your spine is in good standing. I don't know if he could pass that. Just like when he was circling MMA a few years ago, or several years ago, including the IFL, he, you know, it's one of those things.
I know, where, yeah, I remember that Dana said he failed the physical or something.
Right, and so now, WWE has this really strict policy now. So could he get through those hurdles even if they wanted to have him? I don't know.
Okay, so let's say he doesn't get if he can't pass a physical, my point is moot. Let's say he does. Do you work with him or not, Kurt?
I would say you can do 2-3 matches a year most with him. I would not have him doing house shows. I would not have him weekly at TVs. I would have him in ring 2-3 times a year. If you wanted to promote those matches, of course you have to. You do the TVs building to those shows. But I would be very uneasy. I actually think if there was an environment where he could thrive and maybe do okay would be with Lucha Underground, because it's a less intensive schedule. They could, you know, pay him a decent amount, hopefully. And he loves working with Ray. Ray loves working with him. They could wrestle probably when they're 90 years old and still have amazing chemistry and make it work.
On You Fight 164.
Or you Are Fight 2 or whatever it's called. I don't know if another place exists that I would like to see him fight or wrestle. I don't want him in New Japan, but I think the Lucha Underground style and then do the hardcore stuff with him might be the right environment for him.
Yeah, how about you, Em? So if he can pass the physical.
Okay, assuming he passes the physical, they need new WrestleMania Band-Aids. And so I would probably have him wrestle once or twice a year till the wheels fall off. If I can get 5 years out of him as a WrestleMania Band-Aid, then so be it. You know, we don't know how much long Taker has, and so they need some new Band-Aids, whether that's Angle or Goldberg or whoever else. And if an Olympic gold medalist dies on my watch, that's the chance that I take. But it would literally have to be you're wrestling once or twice a year, period. Like, I don't care how many people get popped for wellness or how many injuries there are, how desperate we are. You would have to have the discipline to not start dipping your hand in the cookie jar more often, no matter how tempting it might be.
Yep. Now, let me ask you guys a question. I was watching Raw. One of the things that just came to my head is that they don't have as many captivating talkers as they have in the past. And so I was looking and I was thinking to myself something that I wanted to ask you both. Who, in your estimation, are the top three talkers to you in WWE?
Does The Rock count? Because that makes it so much easier. Now you have to make
it. In terms of week in and week out guy, I mean, I'll go first to give you a little bit of time, Court.
Very generous.
There's not many. I mean, you've got Enzo and Cass and The New Day as like two of the only consistent things that come out and get over week in and week out. I still do get a little nervous with Enzo, just in terms of I'd like to see him speak just a little more natural. You don't want the audience to sense that you're reciting a poem. You know, Muhammad Ali, who literally was doing poetry, what made him so great is it felt like it was off the top of his head a lot of the time. And Enzo scripts great, great stuff. I just think a little bit of a tweak there to make it feel a little more natural. And that's it. I don't even have a third one that really pops into mind. I mean, and you think about how long the show is at 3 hours. You know, like with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens in that tech segment, which, and I didn't do a bad job, but, you know, the 15-minute talking segment was invented, like, for The Rock in Austin. And now, because of the 3 hours, they give the 15-minute talking segment, like, to anyone, and it really hurts the show.
Right. And you're right. There's certain environments where that's perfect and it's built because they can freeball and give you 15 explosive minutes. Other times, you know, it's giving a guy a stick after he's had a match, he's got the adrenaline flowing, and he gives you 60 seconds of pure gold, like they used to do on Nitro with Mean Gene.
Yeah.
And you'd get guys that could do that. And I've always noticed that you get a lot more out of talent coming out of a match where you can interview them, they're all fired up, and they're running off of that adrenaline, and they're still connected to the crowd, than doing it cold in a pre-tape room or coming out at the beginning of the show and trying to get something out of someone. It's just a weird thing. As for my three guys, Paul Heyman, number one.
There you go. Okay.
I mean, he's amazing. Kevin Owens is really good. Bray Wyatt, I just think if he could streamline the rhetoric and we can actually digest it, he'd be amazing.
Yeah, because he has great delivery, but like
exceptional.
His content is super JoJo sometimes.
Well, I think everyone, like, you know, you look at that and it's like, you know, you have this cool character and you say all these twisted things, but we have to be able to take away something and get to the meat of it. And that's something, like you pointed out with Enzo, you have to be careful and make sure you're effective, because he writes a lot of great stuff. But you don't have to get it all in there for one promo. Spread it out. You're going to have a lot of opportunity with that stick. You don't have to all do it in one foul swoop. Here's one for you. Seth Rollins was training with Roderick Strong. Roderick Strong recently departed Ring of Honor, and all signs point to him going to greener pastures, shall I say, in the next few weeks, if not months.
Wow, they got a hell of a talent right there.
And yeah, I think it's
definitely
going to happen.
That's one guy I wanted to get into Lucha Underground, and I also wanted to get into AAA, man. Hell of a guy and a hell of a talent.
Yeah, and I look at guys like him. I look at guys like AJ Styles. You know, AJ, who was with TNA for a decade, at some point, you know, you look, he's not really factored into the big picture. Hulk Hogan, Sting, Kurt Angle, Christian, all these guys are getting fast-tracked, and he's put on the back burner. He could have at any point in time gone on cruise control, taken it easy on his body, but he still killed it and evolved and got better with time, and that's just a testament to AJ's work ethic and not doing that. And the same thing can be said about Roderick Strong in Ring of Honor, where he really was never at the forefront. He never was the guy on top and was there for a decade. It was part of the gimmick, you know? And I look at this guy now, just like AJ and TNA, and I think the parallels are there. And you put him in NXT, you put him in WWE, he's going to be amazing and great, great contributor, and I'm glad to see him finally get his own. I remember the days of seeing him on Florida Indies with he had a tag team partner that was his brother. What was his name? Cedric Strong?
Cedric Strong, yeah. that wasn't really his brother, but, I mean, they were a good team. I always tried to avoid wrestling Roderick just because of how hard he hits. I did wrestle Cedric many times. The guy, you know, he's one of those guys where pretty much from day one, everyone's like, this guy's going to make it. And then for whatever reason, you know, kind of came up in that era where WWE was shy about signing indie guys. And finally now, for whatever reason, they finally realized, hey, if someone's good and over, why don't we just sign them?
Right.
You know, but it kind of sucked for Roderick that he did. He came up in that era where, like, you being good was like, oh, we don't want you. We want guys from scratch.
And I remember when he was in TNA, when I was there, he had a real good tag team with Austin Aries.
Yes, yes, yeah.
And
well, yeah, I mean, look at how well Aries is doing in NXT. That's a guy they should have signed a decade ago.
Yeah, Aries is very good too. But yeah, strong. One time I saw him wrestle. As a matter of fact, shout out to PWG that their Ebola tournament is coming up, and they got some really good talent. He I saw him in PWG against Brian Cage. Now, if they stand next to each other, obviously Cage is way bigger than him, bro. They put on a physical fight, and Roderick Strong just chopped him down and chopped him up and beat him up. That it was very believable, even though he was way smaller than him. Almost kind of Chris Benoit, kind of like Chris Benoit. You know, everything really crisp, everything really looked good, and so yeah, they got a real good get right there.
A story that I saw this week that I wanted to ask you about: Konnan, a former TNA and Lucha Underground star, Hernandez was involved in an out of the ring brawl with Brett McKenzie before an indie show. Did you hear anything about this? I don't know what kind of spurred this incident. Cord, I don't know if you have some insight.
I guess there was a beef, and they got into it. I don't know if you have the details of the story about what transpired.
There's like video online, right?
Yeah, and I guess Hernandez was busted open. He ends up in the bathroom, and they just go. He's thrown down with another independent wrestler. The promoter gets involved. It's a melee. At the end, I guess Hernandez left before his match, when I guess his family was there too. So it's an ugly event.
Yeah, bro. I don't know. The one thing, somebody sent me the video. You know, it's in black and white. It's kind of far, but it almost looks like maybe Hernandez kicked a guy or something. The guy just got up and they started throwing and everybody separated him, you know. But the one thing that I saw that they put a couple of people was hashtag bully. And I always see him, you know, like I always see him kind of like bitter, bro. Like he never really made big money or really got the spot that he wanted. Because I remember when they would put him like against Matt Morgan and people like that. And when he was wrestling with Matt Morgan and people like that in TNA, he was really mad that, you know, he felt that he should get a better singles push. And then they sent him to Mexico to learn Spanish, which he never learned. Boom. So they could bring him back as this Hispanic, you know, champion and push him. And that never happened. You know, then he went to Lucha Underground. And then he tried to work for TNA, which actually got MVP fired. Okay, so he ended up getting fired from both those places. And I remember, I remember like in the back, you know, just him, you know, just always having like an attitude of just a bitter guy, you know. And so who knows if maybe, maybe this isn't even it, if he went there and tried to punk the guy out in some way and the guy was tired of it. And a lot of times, another thing that he was very reckless a lot of times, especially with the border toss, he just chuck people and not take care of them. And I go, bro, you're going to break somebody's neck one day. So
what did he say?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, you know. And
disagreed with you or he just didn't care?
Almost like he didn't care because he kept doing it, you know. So at the end of the day, like I said, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I've always felt he was kind of bitter and kind of a bully, and maybe that's what it, you know, somebody finally stood up to him, or it could be something else. I'm sure we'll find out.
Well, speaking of another questionable character in the wrestling business, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, who recently it was ruled was, I guess, mentally deficient and unable to stand trial, although I believe the issue may be revisited and that ruling might be reversed. It's looking like he's now going to be once again doing personal appearances at wrestling conventions and different autograph signings and things of that nature. I don't know if this will play any role in his legal situation, but if he's mentally unfit to sit in court, how is he going to interact with the public and sign autographs?
They might jump the gun on that one.
Yeah, I mean, is he putting the con in Wrestling Con?
Well, I'm wondering how Allentown will proceed, if they will proceed at all.
That was for the WrestleCon thing, but
I said ahead. WrestlingCon.
WrestlingCon.
I mean, it's not in good taste. I mean, for a promoter right now to probably get in bed with Snuka.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't yeah, that's a good point too. Even I was just thinking about if I was his lawyer, do I want him doing this?
Yeah, when but I'm trying to prove court. But wouldn't you think that the lawyers now would have evidence and say, look, yeah, this guy's engaging with fans. How can you say that he wasn't mentally qualified?
Right.
Guess what? We're bringing this back to trial.
This is like when a mobster has, like, you know, he's playing the senile card and he's got like the bathrobe on.
That's awesome. That's one.
I love that. That's a good move.
And then not only did he have the bathrobe, but he's got a guy escorting him.
And the slippers and everything. Yes. And awesome. He thinks it's Christmas and it's July. It's like that. And then the guy were to, like, just, you know, break kayfabe, hop into a big meeting and all the cameras are there. Like, oh, he's totally with it. It's like, if this is a scam and everyone's watching you and you're being marketed at a wrestling convention, and again, it's just like it doesn't seem like that's a good call or good move. But I don't know what the double jeopardy kind of situation is in Pennsylvania in this kind of situation. I don't know the legalities if they can go back after he's been deemed incompetent. If they can now go back and say, listen, Exhibit A, this guy's going down to Orlando and he's going to be doing some convention and he's clearly able to conduct business and that seems to be a disconnect. I don't know how that's going to play into his future at all, but, you know.
Now that I got your thoughts on the before, remember I asked you who we thought were the three best talkers on Raw?
Yes.
I would also like to get your opinion, both of yours, and I will go first with our partner from Compton, Quebec. What did you think of the commercial with the three-layered thing from Pizza Hut, with the pizza on top and the big cookie?
I didn't see it. My DVR automatically skips all the commercials.
Okay, have you not seen this commercial from Pete? Did you see it, Kurt?
No, I have not seen it. I need to see it.
Okay, this is seriously JoJo Dutch. It's this big box, and it has like three boxes in it that you can slide out. And like,
is this like the Three Tower of Doom thing from WCW?
Kind of.
The pizza version.
Yeah.
David Arquette jumps out of the middle of the pizza.
Right. Okay. You know what? I let the first one go. And so then he slides out. The first one is like a pizza. I think the second one is also a pizza. And then the third one that you slide out is like this humongous cookie, like a chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
This is like a stoner's paradise. You must have been like drooling seeing this.
It's like the other day I actually put this, I tweeted this. I was like, I actually saw an animated a commercial for an animated movie called Sausage Party.
Triple treat box. I'm looking at a picture now.
Oh, you're on a diet. Don't look.
Okay.
Don't look. Stop. So you're an enabler, Conan.
Yeah, I won't look.
Well, here's this to give everyone an update. PWG announced their BOLA 2016 entrants. It's Cody Rhodes, Kamatachi, Jeff Cobb, Mark Haskins, Dalton Castle, Pete Dunn, I don't know, Sammy Callahan, Tommy End, Trevor Lee, Adam Cole, Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. John Hennigan, and Jack Gallagher. So that's your 12 in the Battle of Los Angeles going down later this summer.
Is Conan's house getting pressure washed?
No, he's just using a water floss thing on his teeth.
They got some more people coming in for like the other matches. Let me close these doors. Wait.
I think a SWAT team just showed up.
I just
gassing
your
his
house
place.
Will be sparkling after this.
It seriously feels like his microphone's inside like the dentist's office.
Sorry.
No problem. Now, speaking of unexpected occurrences at the Ashenoff home, I have to bring this up. I have to bust your balls. I got all these tweets the other day, people urging me to let you know that you had butt-dialed your Periscope app and you were streaming the floor, and at some point you were watching WCW Nitro match with Jericho
worse,
or something.
Even worse than that. No. I did not butt-dial it. Even worse than that.
Oh, no.
Okay? Is that... it's not hard at all, but I was trying to.
I hope you don't say that too often.
Yeah, well, wow, really?
Yeah.
And so I was going to try to figure out how to use the Periscope, and that's what happened. I was figuring out how to use it.
He did not figure out how to press off. I think we heard the dog being fed. There was the Jericho Conan 98 classic from WCW Nitro playing at one point. We got to see some of your floors. And I saw some comments like, God damn, get something done to your floors. People don't realize you're getting your house like remodeled right now, right?
Right. That's why you hear that.
So this man does take pride in his floors. Trust me. He has a lot of pride in his floors. They will be varnished. They'll be buffed. They're going to look like $1 million on the next Periscope when that goes down.
Here's one thing I got to know, just out of curiosity for both of you guys. We've had so much talk about SmackDown going live, and I understand why they have to hype it. I do think a lot of the average fans didn't realize that it wasn't live. Has it kind of turned SmackDown like temporarily into this lame duck show that they're hyping so much, this particular SmackDown that, you know, was maybe 6 weeks away when they first started hyping it? Has it made it like an awkward time for SmackDown, do you guys think?
Well, yeah. And it makes you think, what are you inheriting when you do flip the switch and you do the brand split? Is it something that still has great value? Yes, it has been on the air since 1999. Yes, it was a different animal and you mutated into different things over the years. But at this point, is it more sexy? Is it more appealing to give it a new name and call a show something else with another color scheme and start anew? And the mystery being, well, what's the opening going to look like? What's the color scheme? What's the logo going to look like? What are they going to call it? And create that groundswelling, that buzz for it. Then just try to reboot SmackDown. Because you're coming with that baggage. So, I mean, then when the show goes away, maybe it's for the best. And so this lame duck period is what it is. Here's another one that a shocking return happened over the weekend as Kevin Sullivan returned to wrestling, debuting in Ring of Honor, managing BJ Whitmer. I was waiting for MSL to do the running.
Oh, you know me, man. I don't like to travel, but no, this was such a cool thing, man. I'm so
what
happy
city
for
was
him.
This?
I think the pay-per-view was maybe in the Carolinas. I'd have to look it up. But you know, just happy, you know, for another member of the MLW Radio family to get an opportunity, and the fans seem to love it. You know, a lot of them hit me up on Twitter. I'm sure they hit up the MLW account as well. And I love the promo that Kevin cut, and I just want to see this thing keep going. We'll see what's next.
Yeah. Shouts out to him, man. Happy for him. You know, it's just funny when I see Kevin now, and he's just, and we all are, bro. You know, like even when I right. talk to Kevin Nash or Lex Luger or whoever it is, we're just at a different place now. Back then, everybody was, you know, dog eat dog. It was a shark tank, you know, egos, a lot of money, and everybody, you know, and so everybody's now like living a normal life, and they're normal people now, you know, and so it's really cool to be able to chop it up with Kevin, because I always looked up to him even before I got into the wrestling business, and he's the one that got me into WCW. But I'm very happy for him.
We talked last week about Ricochet had gotten, you know, there had been rumors of him getting a very large offer from Lucha Underground to stay there. Spoiler alert. I'll give you guys a couple seconds for those that want to avoid spoilers to just skip ahead by 30 seconds. Spoiler alert. Okay. He loses a loser leaves the temple match. He lost at the past taping. And here's another exclusive. He officially turned down Lucha Underground's offer in favor of taking bookings with New Japan. And he's got all sorts of bookings through the fall. I don't know where he's going to end up after that. I don't know if there's any sort of non-compete in the contract in terms of when he would have to wait to go to WWE. I'm not sure.
He will be sitting out until, let's say, September, October of 2017.
Wow. Really?
He's 27. He's going to be 28 this fall. If you look at October of 2017, he's 28. Going on 29, somewhere around there. This is the time. This is the time to do it, and he'll be very much
so
in demand
his deal
for the next
makes
year.
Sit out a year, or is it 6 months after it airs, or something?
The,
or
it's the details of his contract. Basically, that's the magic date on the calendar.
Gotcha. Wow, man. Well, it's so interesting just to look at, like, you know, I don't understand why WWE doesn't find guys sooner, or maybe they just think it's better for their development to kind of spread their wings other places. But, like, you know, when Lucha Underground was fighting to get Ricochet, however long ago that was, a couple years ago, whatever the situation was, and, you know, bought him out of his Evolve deal or however that went down, we're fighting over him. You know, I was curious back then, like, everyone in the business can see that this guy is going to be something. Why isn't WWE jumping on him then? Mm-hmm. He just seemed,
bro,
like a no-brainer.
I've always thought the same thing, him and other people that they bled through their system. And the only conclusion I can come to, and in a minute I'll tell you something about Ricochet, but only conclusion that I can come to is kind of the same thing that happens at TV. They got so many guys going through there that sometimes it's really hard to you can miss a couple guys, but you know, how can you miss somebody as talented as Ricochet? Because I remember when he went there for his tryout and he didn't make it. And I was told that I might have been, I don't know if it was Noble or Mercury. One of them was like really vouching for him. And then I later heard that somebody felt he was too cocky. So because one guy feels you're too cocky, if that was really the reason, you know, he's not there. But first of all, Ricochet doesn't need a mask, bro. You know, I mean, yeah, the Prince Puma character is really cool, but Ricochet without a mask is money. You know,
he's such a good-looking guy. The mask on him seemed weird to me.
And very charismatic.
Yeah. I've got a Lucha Underground question for you, Conan. Rey Mysterio not there this past weekend for the finale. Any idea what's up with that?
Yeah, it was his daughter's birthday, her 15th birthday, called Conchita. Yeah, so that's why.
Well, that is such a reasonable answer that I have.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you, since you didn't see the pizza commercial, Did you?
And Court doesn't want me to look at the pictures.
No, right. We cannot tempt him. He's doing so great with his diet right now. Please.
All
right.
Did either one of you see the commercial for the Queen of the South?
Yes. I really hope it's good. I want to believe it's good. It just
– Is there – okay. Just answer me one question.
Yes.
Is there any veracity to the rumor
Six
that it's
points.
About disco?
I haven't heard that. He is in Las Vegas now, but he was originally from Atlanta, although he did grow up in Brooklyn apparently. Did you hear the thing about Vince Russo and disco, where like there was some YouTube video and allegedly, supposedly, I didn't see it. I just heard this secondhand, but Vince Russo and disco are talking. Vince Russo basically says, I guess, that he pitched Pop TV on being, I guess, a consultant of some sort on TNA to help, you know, right the ship. And basically buried TNA, supposedly, allegedly. I did not see this video, but he had posted this video and then took it down. And Disco's like, wow, that's kind of a heel thing to do. I don't know if this was accidentally recorded or part of a show.
And Conan is getting a root canal right now, by the way.
Let me close this door again.
Very unprofessional podcast here. We should really get some sort of sponsor out of this, some like Home Depot sponsor.
All right.
Did you hear about Sabu in Mexico for Elite? A rare appearance with Sabu down south of the border.
Yes, I heard that he wrestled there. I'm going to be getting a little report from somebody in the dressing room of how everything went down there, and I'll be able to give you guys a little report on the next podcast. But I didn't hear anything about Sabu, you know, getting in any trouble or anything.
What does he look like these days? I haven't seen Sabu in so many years. I know he had shaved his head at one point. I don't know if – has he grown his hair back?
He should have done it like hair versus hair match to lose the hair. Could have drawn some money.
Yeah.
I don't know what the reasons were behind him. Maybe – I don't know what he – some people just randomly say fuck it and they shave their head and they don't think about it. But I think he could have drawn money. Anytime I see someone get rid of their hair without making money, I'm like, what are you thinking? You know, or a mask that goes
WWE
missing.
WWE never does it, right? I mean, and they should. It's such a great gimmick.
Well, I mean, like in the case of
Jarrett a million years ago.
In the case of like La Sombra with the mask, you would have to introduce him, set him up, get him over, and then lose the mask, and then rebuild him, which would have been, to me, just like a lot of work, unless you're looking at like a year and a half type of thing or something like that, and you realize that's the way to go. Or maybe the other thought process is, we want him to get as familiar as he can in registering and expressing himself without the mask. Let's start it now. Let's not wait a year and a half to establish the mask and then have him lose the mask. It's all about, you know, the long-term strategy and how they do this stuff. But it just broke that co-founder and co-creator of the UFC, Campbell McLaren, made a play this year to buy back the UFC for $2.8 billion.
Wow.
And was turned down by Lorenzo Fertitta and Frank Fertitta.
Well, I mean, the rumors are that it's going to go for four, so I guess it was good that they turned it down.
That's a lot of cheddar when you think about that. $2.8 billion. When you think in comparison to Major League Baseball, the LA Dodgers just sold in 2012 for a record-setting price of $2 billion. So this goes above and beyond that, and with the Fertitta Zuffa turning down that bid, it theoretically would drive valuation for the UFC property up because there's higher bids. And it's going to be very interesting looking at UFC 200 if they do in fact announce that they have been sold. And if so, what's that conglomerate look like? There's talk that, you know, the Kraft family, Ari Emanuel and William Morris Endeavor are involved with a lot of other players, Wanda out in Japan. It's going to take a lot of people cobbling together a lot of money, and then you have to have a managing director of this conglomerate overseeing this thing. So it's going to be interesting how this evolves. But Campbell McLaren, I work with him. He's still the CEO of Combate Americas, and they work with the UFC on the UFC Fight Pass. So it's a really funky and unusual story to have someone that's working with UFC now try to make an offer. It's kind of like Eric Bischoff, not exactly, where he was working for WCW, then tried to buy it with Fusent Media in 2001.
But it's even funnier is that he originally sold UFC to the Fertitta's brothers.
Yeah, he was one of the co-founders. I think he was out of the company when Bob Marowitz ultimately sold it. But at the end of the day.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. Just keep it like that.
$2.8 billion turned down. Imagine that, being able to have the fortitude as the Fertittas to turn down $2.8 billion large. That tells you they're going to even have a bigger payday probably later this summer. And that to me is pretty fucking amazing.
Hey, they deserve it, bro. They took that company over. And they fucking did a great job from putting it on Fox to putting it on Spike, the ultimate thing. Everything that they've done an incredible job. And right now it's a really hot commodity. And one of the reasons why it sold more than the Dodgers is because it's such a global brand. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's a league. Yeah, it's a whole damn league.
Wait till they do UFC China. Boom.
Yeah, they've been close. You know, they've been there for an event in the past. I think as they get more involved with Asia, especially in those emerging economies that are going to the next level, like India,
where martial arts is a part of their culture.
Yeah, but India too. I mean, that's another big market. That's where TNA's bread is coming from. That's where it's getting buttered, is in India, with the Sony 6 deal. That's keeping essentially TNA alive. You know, it really is. And they're supposed to tour at some point soon this year as part of their contractual obligation.
They've canceled like two tours, haven't they?
They've postponed them because that's part of the deal. It's like, we'll give you the money, we'll put you on the air, but we want a tour here before our own people. And at some point, they're going to have to pay that off. How you're going to underwrite that when you have other bills and other things, they're trying to probably get a stay of execution. And right now, they keep trying to figure out how to continue to kick out of going under. Billy Corgan buys a piece, and I don't know how many times they're going to get bailed out before Dixie has to cough up a larger chunk, but she's slowly selling off at least maybe fractions of a point, if not a few points in the company, instead of getting 100% bid, which is what the Fertittas are smart. It's really – they're able to get all their ownership team together to sign off on this big payoff. If you start diluting that ownership stake – you have more people that have to sign off on more things, and it can get really dicey when it comes to when you're selling a company. So TNA's, I'm curious to see when they do pull that trigger, when that thing does go, and what comes of TNA. I don't know the value at this point. There's been talk that companies have been looking at the books recently. Will WWE go in there and do something? I don't think they would. I think they would see it play out, but there's no real vested interest in acquiring it. What are you getting? What's it worth? There's a tape library. You get that down the road. But
didn't somebody say that WWE was willing to buy their tape library? Somebody told me that. Might have been Meltzer.
I'm certain they would at some point want to buy it. But do you go almost the route of ECW? Wait for it to go into bankruptcy, or wait like other libraries where you're in a position where you don't have to get it now. You can get it later when the value is lower, and they know that WWE will be there.
Bro, some guy tweeted Dixie yesterday. He said something like, I swear, he goes, show your titties, do something to get people to watch your show. And she actually wrote back. She goes, don't think so. Just happy producing the best television.
It's got to be a real mental grind at this point.
Come on, Dixie. Show your tits. Come on.
How deep is your fucking head in the sand, man? That show's fucking brutal, man. I watched it a second week in a row, and I'm doubly ashamed to admit it.
Wow, I can't believe it. I was talking to Jim Cornette actually this afternoon, and I had an episode on, and we were just talking about TNA, and I said to him, do you realize that the show that they cross market with this is called Schitt's Creek? And I've never heard Jim Cornette laugh as hard as my God, he laughs so hard. It's like, of course, the show that they're gonna cross market with is called Schitt's Creek. It's the theme for the fucking company.
Yeah, it's a Canadian show that they got the American rights to, and I think it's like the only other notable thing on Pop. I don't get Pop TV, so I had to watch Schitt's Creek on Amazon Prime, but. Yeah, it is interesting that those are the two shows that they have together. I'll say this. Has there ever been a point in time in TNA's entire existence, and granted, I'm sure they have more viewers now than they had when it was weekly pay-per-views with Ken Shamrock and Ron Killings, but in terms of like the relevance in the business, I've never heard people talk less about TNA than now.
It's yeah, it's in this weird place. I think there's just a fatigue to criticizing it, to knocking it, to even
like
analyzing it.
Puppy,
it's,
you know, you feel bad.
Well, I just think there's fatigue. I don't know if it's sympathy or it's just listen. We've how many times can you go over the same talking points? And I mean, it's even true with other companies. It's like you get to a point where it's like it's redundant and it becomes like this echo chamber. Everyone's saying the same damn thing, or you're reading the same damn thing. You know, if they're able to rebuild and find new financing. All right, we'll have a conversation then. But until then, it's just status quo. They're in a sense of wrestling purgatory. They're not dead, but they're not really alive. They're just in this weird dead zone.
Bro, I really hope that somebody buys it and they don't let it go to waste like raisins on Halloween. Boom, nice little verbal gem.
I don't know. You might put yourself over a little too much with that raisins on Halloween.
I'm also in Iran.
Who gets raisins on Halloween?
That's exactly it. When you do, you chuck them out.
You must have had a horrible Halloween experience.
Here's the thing, Conan.
Yes.
If you fill your mouth 80% chocolate, 20% raisins.
Right.
The raisins have a use. Put a couple of the smaller candy bars in your mouth and then dump a few raisins and chew it at the same time.
Why don't you just buy a raisin?
Stop. See, he's on a diet. See what this is happening? He's already starting to figure out ways to try to eat healthy but eat chocolate.
Okay, let me ask you a question real quick. First of all, why don't you just eat a raisinette?
Well, maybe the house didn't give you raisinettes.
Okay.
You can't waste food on Halloween, man. Just be resourceful. Even if they give you an apple, cover it in chocolate.
Did you go out for Halloween?
I mean, I haven't done that in 20 years.
But when you were a little kid.
Yeah, of course. Until encephalitis scared everybody.
What?
What is that?
It was a big thing in Miami in the news that you couldn't go out for Halloween because you might get encephalitis.
The mosquito?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a really dangerous thing, but there was like a big scare in Miami.
When I was a kid, yeah.
That sucks.
But I don't know if you could trust the media because I can remember when the news would legitimately report on the chupacabra as if it existed.
Well, that is the Miami media. I mean, what do you expect? It's a slow news day.
So what was your favorite candy to get back in the day, and what was the candy you detested?
Peanut butter cups were always my favorite.
Right.
And I guess as far as detesting, like there's candies that otherwise I wouldn't mind, but I think like the super sweet stuff clashes with the chocolate, you know, stuff like Nerds and Skittles and that kind of stuff.
All right.
You can't really be eating that kind of stuff like – back to back or in the same hour or whatever.
Right.
So you had to kind of pick, am I doing a chocolate night or am I doing a non-chocolate night? You can't do both.
Well, I like how you had that so, you know, well prepared. How about you, Court?
I like Charleston Chew.
Right. Thank you.
That's a good one.
But you're a classy motherfucker.
Yeah. No, I got to go that way. I like Butterfinger. I used to love Snickers.
Right.
Those would be my
and what didn't you like? Like, what were the candy that when you got, you were like, really, dude?
Hershey bars because it was generic. Hershey bars because they're so generic. It's like, really?
Right.
This is
no,
it?
Let me tell you even worse than the Hershey bar. Ready?
Right.
The Hershey bar's dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate. Not
I
a
hate
fan.
Dark chocolate.
Right. It was like, really? This is
I'm
what you're
sorry,
giving
sorry, amazing.
And
call.
Let me tell you a Halloween candy. Are you ready for this? This is actually a Halloween candy that had tremendous heat whenever it was given to me. Do you remember the candy corn?
Oh, we're big fans of candy corn. There's different flavors. I've gotten into all types of different candy corn things.
That's like a white guy candy.
You're racially profiling my Halloween candy? What the fuck? There's cinnamon candy corn. There's spicy candy corn.
I didn't know they were in different flavors. I just got the one that was yellow and orange, and it was brutal.
Oh, man. I remember when I was a kid, we actually went to a candy corn factory where they made this shit. That was kind of it was a fun if you're going to go on a school trip and you get to eat candy for free, that's not a bad school trip. That's also why I was a fat
kid. Yeah, your school was way better than my school. My school made us eat squid.
Ugh. That's horrible. No, I mean, that's – why would you eat squid?
We had to dissect the squid and cook it and eat it in fourth grade.
Who was this, home ec?
I don't know. I guess it was science class maybe.
Why'd you have to cook it and eat it?
I don't know. If you didn't eat the squid, you got enough.
What'd you do?
I ate the squid, bro. I was a straight-A student.
Did you have to ever dissect a frog, either of you?
No.
No.
I did.
And did you have to eat it afterwards?
Did they make you eat it?
No, just that was it. They like you came in the room. It was like on this. Actually, it was on like a little cooking tray. But they had like crucified it. They had like nailed it down its arms and its legs, and it was like spread open. And like okay, you know, slice it open down from the top of the bomb. We slice it open, and it just explodes out. And it's like, and that's it. And then they're like supposed to like take the little pieces apart and show it on a tray. And it's like people are just throwing up. And you didn't have to do it, but everyone, you know, if you were a guy, you had to do it because you were like, oh, I have to open up a frog. That's the cool thing. Dude, it was nasty.
I was a very open pussy, though. I would have had no problem refusing.
I didn't want to do it, but I was like, man, yeah, I don't want to be like the one dude that doesn't do it. But it was kind of like...
Plus, Off was yelling at you to do it.
Well, the thing, too, is like, I don't think they... I don't think you can... I wonder if you dissect creatures now in elementary school or middle school or high school because of the animal cruelty. I know they're all dead and everything, but still, just I wonder if you're doing that unless you're in med school nowadays. If there's any med school students listening to our podcast, which I highly doubt because you're in med school, let us know.
And if we have any elementary school students that are listening,
much better.
Let us know if you're dissecting squid and frying them and eating them.
Ugh, that's only a Miami-Dade County thing. But that being said, we have some news as this is Conan's final show at MLW Radio. We want to thank you for taking this trip with us, big guy, over the past 4.5 years and all the laughs and good times we've shared. We've created this outrageous, albeit very dysfunctional family here at MLW Radio, and you're definitely fam, and I want everyone to know that you're definitely fam and always will be fam. I also want people to know that this isn't some weird deal, nor is there any drama going on behind the scenes. Conan had a business opportunity come his way, and he simply could not turn it down. And I respect that. MSL respects that. I don't want people thinking there's some outrageous drama that played out behind closed doors. MSL and Conan are probably on the best terms that you guys have ever been on. You guys squashed all that stuff in Dallas back a few months ago. And I was so happy that happened for both of you, for our listeners, and for my sanity. Because you're both friends and you're guys that I enjoy collaborating with. And so I don't know, Conan, if you want to back me up on this.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, bro, is just when we – it's just – it's funny because when, you know, me and Court actually met through that LinkedIn thing.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
And so we started to talk, and then he told me he had a podcast, which I didn't even know what the fuck that was. And he was like, yeah, you know, because we were talking on the phone for a while.
Right.
And we had a really good conversation, and the next day we talked, and I was like, well, this guy's pretty cool. And so I went on the podcast, and then we did a 3 or 4 parter, and then you said, hey, would you like to do your own show? And then we got together, and then MSL came in, and it was really crazy, man, because then we were like, okay, how can we make money off of this? And then we started to make some money, so it was even more fun. And, you know, I had like this is not an excuse at all, you know, but just so much work that I was going through, so much stress that I was going through, and I'm bipolar at the same time. I kind of had like a little meltdown with MSL, you know, and I think I went overboard and I was rude. And so when we went to Dallas, you know, and I was checking him out, and he's just a cool dude that he loves wrestling, and he just fucking, you know, wants to have a good time, and he was happy, and the fans happy being around the wrestlers, and he's not a mean-spirited person, you know. And I was having second thoughts when we went to shake hands and everybody was booing you. But, you know, you're just a cool dude, bro. And so, you know, I got out of line, and for that, I apologize to everybody. But so, you know, probably July 7th, you'll be seeing me with a show called Keeping It 100 on Podcast One. And I'm hoping to have you guys come with me as much as you can, because I know you have a lot of projects, some that you have talked about and some that you haven't. Court, and you got the MLW radio thing that you got to look after. But, you know, I really hope that you guys will come with me or come visit me as much as you can, because I couldn't have done a podcast with two greater guys. The just the dichotomy of all three of us was just so different, somehow worked, you know, and I'm going to miss that.
Yeah. Conan, I want you to know that you're family and will always be family, and that will never change. Sometimes families just move down the road and move on, but you always stay in touch. You get together, you rock mango suits and chill when the schedule permits, and that's it here. So, as Conan moves on down the road, you want to make sure you follow him on Twitter, on Facebook, at Conan5150. Follow MSL at MSL on Twitter and Instagram, and follow MLW at MLW on Twitter and at Facebook at facebook.com/Major League Wrestling. So as we say goodbye to one family member, before signing off this week, we have a little surprise. We also want to welcome two new members to our family. Take it away, champ.
Woo! That's right. It's time. We're finally back, Rick. Rick and Conrad are back on the air doing the podcast thing. There's no more new Woo Nation. Now it's the Ric Flair Show, and you can check it out at our brand new home, Major League Wrestling. That's right. The MLW Radio Network is the new home of the Ric Flair Show. And, of course, you can check out all the updates at RicFlairShow.com. And, Rick, I'm fired up to get the band back together, man.
Yeah, me too, man. Everywhere I go, they want to know where's the C-Man. So here we are, man.
Back and we're fired up and ready to do it. We've got a lot of great plans for big-time guests. We're going to continue our great guest list that we had at our old home. But we're really excited about new things we've got going at our new place. We're going to even have the Ric Flair Show hotline. That's right. We're going to feature one caller every single week. And if you'd like to be on our very first show, give us your hot take. Give us a call at the Ric Flair Show hotline. That's 844-RIC-SHOW. That's 844-RIC-SHOW. Leave us a voicemail. We'll play you on this Wednesday's episode. That's right. Every Wednesday, it's the new home of the Ric Flair Show right here on MLW Radio Networks and, of course, RicFlairShow.com.
I love it, Conrad. And can you imagine somebody being able to ask me, especially if it's a woman, anything she wants to know, and I'm obligated to answer? Good Lord.
Yeah, we're not going to shy away.
Off in a week?
You know, I don't think we have to worry about that anymore. I think the reins are being pulled off. I think Court's going to let us have a good time, and we're looking forward to it. And it's the new home of the Ric Flair Show, MLW Radio Networks, and RicFlairShow.com every Wednesday. It's a Woo Wednesday, Rick. Can we get a big woo?
It's a Woo Wednesday coming up.
At RicFlairShow.com and the MLW Radio Network.
The rule.